remember to mute and unmute it. Make it a better experience for everybody, okay? Thank you.
Okay, does anyone have any issues they'd like to disclose? No? Everyone know?
Trustee Lamphere, I do not.
I do not.
Trustee Galusha, nothing to report.
Okay.
Muted.
Just one note, they finally were patching the potholes today. This is thanks to Zach. Zach approached the DPW way back in March. They were shut down with a reduced crew for quite a while. The asphalt plants opened late this year, but it finally got done. So thank you, Zach.
Thank you, Zach. They were out all there right. A lot. There's a lot to do.
There was a lot to do. There's still more to do. In any case, I'm going to turn this over to Renee. Renee has been talking to the Sheriff's Department, so I'm going to give you the floor, Renee.
Okay, thank you. It's like our first beautiful day in a while, and I want to thank everyone for being here and to Captain DeLizer for taking the time to meet with us. I want to give a little background for Captain DeLizer on how we got here, then let him introduce himself, and then let all of you share your experiences and your concerns with him, and then we can talk about what we can do together to implement some changes immediately for the safety of this neighborhood. Now we have Zach, our DPW director here, and our code enforcement and building inspector, in addition to all the trustees. So the residents that are here on your screen and who live along State Street have been asking for assistance to tackle the speeding on their street for years and years, long before I was even living in the village or even Rochester. I know that speeding on this road was identified as an issue in 2005 in that pedestrian safety and traffic calming plan. And the village inherited all of this traffic that resulted from the town's growth. And these residential streets are used as a speedway on the way to the highway in Pittsford Plaza and wherever else everyone is going. It's a state road, which means it's not under our jurisdiction. And in spite of having to live with the consequences of what happens on this road and the impact of the quality of life of these residents. There are about 15,000 vehicles a day that travel on this short section of State Street. There are no crosswalks on the section of State Street in spite of this being a residential neighborhood. As we mentioned before, the speed just before the village line is 45 miles per hour. The eastbound, so heading out of the village, 85th percentile speed is 44 miles per hour. And we know that a pedestrian hit at that speed has less than 10% chance of survival. And that's assuming that that's like a 30-year-old male pedestrian, if it's a child or an older person, and an SUV, the statistics are much more grim. So there's nothing in the design of this neighborhood road that signals to the driver to slow down, and there appear to be no incentives for drivers to alter their behavior. Engineering or the design of the road is one piece of the neighborhood, and you know that we're working with DOT as part of the State Street Bridge Project and part of their pedestrian safety action plan. To make changes, education is another piece. We're trying to pass some legislation to lower the speed limits on the state roads. All of these are, you know, long-term solutions, and taking a while to implement. And we need to know what we can do now, what we have in our toolbox to help calm traffic on this road. And enforcement is a critical piece of this. We need an ally in law enforcement to help us encourage drivers to slow down. So it's important that the neighborhood know Captain DeLizer and that he has a relationship with this neighborhood as well. So I would like to hand it over to Captain DeLizer to introduce himself, and then we'll let you all give him a little bit of insight on what you experience every day.
Okay. I apologize ahead of time. I'm getting used to muting and unmuting when I'm talking and listening, so it might take me a few minutes before I get kind of used to that whole thing. Absolutely. I actually spent about 20 minutes last night out there from about 10 till 4 till about 10 after 4, just driving back and forth, sitting a little bit, just kind of watching. I drive an unmarked car, so I can get a pretty accurate picture of what's going on. People aren't going to slow down when they see me. They're not going to realize I'm a police car until they're on top of me. Definitely, the traffic wasn't too heavy, so I don't think I got a really great picture of what you're probably seeing on a day-to-day basis. But from what I did see, definitely coming into the village westbound, I did see a lot of cars that were going well in excess of the speed limit in there. So there's definitely, and I would imagine, I didn't see a lot of eastbound traffic, but I would imagine as people are crossing the bridge, they're probably speeding up right from there in anticipation of hitting that 45 mile an hour zone outside the village. So what we've been doing since Renee reached out to me a little while ago about this this topic, I've had my Pittsford cars have been kind of scouting that out and seeing how things are looking. There's definitely some challenges for us with enforcement, just so you're aware. It won't affect us being there, just some of the things that the deputies have relayed back to me after they've been out there a little bit. There's not a lot of great places for them to sit head on there, the back and forth. Hold on a moment. The back and forth for them is a little tough on moving radar because they've got to make a turnaround there to get around to the car, and that's going to be a little bit of a challenge. But that's nothing that we're not used to. We deal with that on a lot of other roadways, so they will figure it out. It's going to take them a little bit of time. But I think the main thing that is going to help reduce the speed in there even more so than tickets is just us being there and being seen. So even if the deputy isn't going to be able to be in a good spot where they can remain hidden, where they might be able to get a ticket, if they're there being seen, people are going to automatically slow down and listen to the speed limit. Excuse me. I'll have to step away in a couple of seconds to take that one because they're gonna keep calling, I have a feeling. But in addition to the getting the deputies out there, I already spoke with our crime prevention deputy Todd Thurston. I don't know if any of you have ever dealt with him before, but he is going to be getting in the next week or two the speed trailer out there. That's the sheriff's office. You know, I'm sure we're all familiar with them. That the flash speed as people go by. So that should be in the next week or two. We're on the list for it. I put us on the list a couple days ago. So as soon as that becomes available, it's on a couple of, we have two of them. They're both on other locations, but I'm on the waiting list for one of them. When they open up from their current location, it should be coming. It should be coming to us. I'm actually going to step away for a moment now and take that phone call. I will be back hopefully in a couple minutes.
Thank you.
What was the name of that? It was like a speed.
A speed trailer. It's just a radar, so it'll show the speed.
I didn't know the phrase that they used.
We do want to know. I'm curious. I don't know if it does both sides. Zach, do you know? Will it only be able to do one direction at a time, or is it different than the one that we have?
Yeah, it's going to be similar to ours, except for it's on the trailer. So it's only going to be able to check the speed coming in one direction. Today, after DOT was done doing their patchwork on State Street, I was able to get over there and put out our speed sentry. It's mounted on the speed sign right by the village sign on just past Durham Way. So
facing going out of the village or coming in?
Coming into. So on the westbound. Okay.
Great.
It would be great if we could have that up at the same time they put the speed trailer so we could catch people going both directions. Did you put the cones out that we spoke of the other day, Zach?
Yeah, the cones are out also. I just can't guarantee how long anything is going to stay out there once DOT catches wind.
Right.
Have you explained to everybody what we're trying to do with the cones?
Yeah, I put cones on both sides of the road, eastbound and westbound, and tried to narrow down the shoulder of the road to not create a wedge.
Let me explain traffic that. By necking the road down at the village line, we're trying to give the drivers a visual cue since we don't have any other physical changes to indicate that drivers should slow down other than the 30 mile per hour speed limit. But by putting cones that kind of ease into the shoulder at the line, we're just, we want to see, and we'd ask you to pay attention and see if it has any effect whatsoever. We know that none of these things unilaterally are going to make a huge difference. I've made this point over and over again, but the only way to have a successful change is to use every tool we have available. Everything that John mentioned on his list, on the email he sent out earlier, and I think also the renewed crosswalks at Durham Way and Chain Place with yield signs in the center of the road.
So I was out there today, it was early this morning, and looking at the curb cut there where we want them to put the crosswalk right where the canal path goes over the road before the bridge. Is that going to be, I mean, the two crosswalks, getting those installed is a cheap, immediate solution if we can get DOT to agree to it. I don't know what the, you know, what standards they'll require in order to justify it, but the curb cut seems to me like it's going to be a bit of a hurdle.
Well, the curb cut's not a big deal. We can saw cut that. And, okay. You know, if they, it really isn't a big deal. And I spent considerable time when the DOT had their information meeting, I think it was in December or January, talking to the director and making the case. We talked a little bit about the detour on Chain Place, but I also hit them hard on the need for physical changes to the block on this section of State Street to narrow the striping of the lanes, restore the crosswalks and the yield signs.
I have a big concern about putting in a crosswalk by the bridge at this point until the traffic is slowed down, because it gives families and children the sense of security that they can cross. And until the traffic is taken care of and the speed, I think we're going to have a terrible accident out there.
If you don't do it, you'll never produce a change.
Can we just put the sign up in the middle of the road and not paint the
crosswalk? To do it, you have to comply. The New York State won't allow us to do that. You have to have a crosswalk. Having the crosswalk and the sign there is a visual cue to drivers to slow down, just like it is everywhere else. When we first put those signs out 20 years ago, they were completely ignored. And although we don't have full compliance, driver behavior has changed as those signs have spread not only in this village, but in other nearby municipalities.
I just have one more thing to say. Unless you're walking and you're at the crown of that bridge, you cannot see children on bikes 20 feet away.
The reason we're trying to lower speeds and why we're going to the lowest legally permitted speed limit possible is because that gives drivers more time to react and actually makes it, that's the whole point of all of this. At the speeds they're traveling now, we have accidents and accidents that are severe because drivers are distracted and they don't have time to react. By using every tool to slow down traveling speeds, we can actually create that time, and then the hump on the bridge would no longer be unsafe. We have the same condition on the other side where we have an existing crosswalk at Boughton Avenue. It's actually safer on this side because there's a straight stretch that has a good view of it from the eastern approach. Renee, would you like to comment?
Well, I was wondering, I mean, we keep talking about these things in conjunction with the reconstruction or the rehabilitation of the bridge. And I think we need to meet with DOT to see if we can get them to put the crosswalk on, because that would allow us to put the signs up, like what you were saying. We can't put those obstructive signs up until we have a crosswalk. And a crosswalk, in the grand scheme of things, is very relatively inexpensive to put out. Do you think they will do that before the street or the bridge rehabilitation?
I think we need to lobby them as strongly as we can. We talked about last week of having a subsequent DOT meeting after this discussion today to not only resolve some of the lighting issues on the bridge in terms of the bridge design, but also push for these other pedestrian improvements to ensure that we make a safer street.
I have a question, Trustee Lamphere.
Yes, you have the floor.
Thank you. Bob, when we had the discussions with the DOT regarding the reconstruction of that bridge, they're doing the deck, has there been any discussion regarding reducing the hump that is in that bridge currently? It's part of their reconstruction.
That is not structurally possible because they are still governed by the shape of the bridge. And even though they're replacing the beams underneath it, the actual truss follows an arc, and they really are limited to follow that arc today. And, you know, there's two ways of looking at physical barriers like that. The old way, back in the 1960s and 1970s, is to straighten every curve and flatten every hump so people can go faster. But in some ways, having a hump, as steep as that is a benefit because the responsible thing is obviously to drive slower because you can't see. And when that's put in tandem with hopefully other improvements we make, perhaps even with lamps on the bridge that are between the sidewalk and the road, we will have a tangible effect, again, to make the driver feel physically enclosed like we do with the street trees and to induce slower driver behavior.
Well, then I would hope that when in discussion of where to place that crosswalk, that sight distance is taken into consideration. Because when you are on that bridge, you do not see that entryway to Shane Place until, or Northfield Common, until you are on the crest of that bridge. You do not see it prior to that, and that's why there are so many fender benders right at that very spot that you're talking about putting a crosswalk.
It's no different from the crosswalk at Shane Place and North Main Street that has the same issue. And one of the considerations in putting a crosswalk there should be flashing beacons or some other device in addition to the yield sign on the sides of the road to really increase its visibility. And we probably should do the same thing with a crosswalk at Boughton Avenue also. I mean, there's budget limitations here, but I think, again, highlighting the visibility of these pedestrian crossings and have these, you know, Renee and I have talked ad nauseum to David at SRF. The more frequent, the closer together the crosswalks are, the more walkable it is, the more pedestrians will cross the street, and the slower drivers will travel.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, John.
While you're talking about the bridge, I've heard twice, and it could be purely rumor, but that rumor is that one side of the bridge, the sidewalk, I'm not sure which one is going to be narrowed. Is there any truth to that?
What we heard, John, and we actually pushed back against this, is they want to narrow the sidewalk on both sides of the bridge by a foot so they can use a different detail to attach the handrail further from the edge of the slab where they think it will be more durable. We both Renee and I, who met with DOT, pushed back against this, saying this is, you know, backwards in terms of what our priorities are. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Renee.
I think we determined that the road is wide enough itself that we could get both conditions met. They can get their special new fasteners in, and we can still maintain a wider sidewalk.
Right now, the sidewalk is 7 feet wide.
Yeah.
They would reduce it to 6 feet.
Maybe not now with social distancing. Maybe they'll allow us to keep it. I mean, we're going to have to stay on top of this. They're going to try to reduce that sidewalk, and it's something that we're going to have to really make sure that we are advocating to keep it, because they don't need to make it 7 feet by standards. They can keep it 6 feet, as I understand it. But we did talk to them, and we all agreed and around that table that there's plenty of room. They need to shrink the sidewalk to give more room to meet the requirements of a state road, and they don't need to do that here. There's plenty of room. There's a more than adequate shoulder. So I think we have to. I'm really terrified they're going to take away our
beautiful sidewalk. Well, I think we need to stay on it, and we need to push on all fronts. You know, the sidewalk, the striping, as John has suggested. I think all of these things, again, they all work in tandem. And if we don't watch them carefully in previous projects, they told us they would reduce the striping to 10 feet. And then we looked and it was back to 12 and 14 feet. So we really have to be vigilant in this whole process. Lily.
Thank you, Bob. Again, we've gone over this before. Could you reiterate why we cannot have parking along that stretch of State Street, which would also deter speeding traffic? It will allow at least on one side.
I'm not saying I agree with it. Their argument is New York State 31 is a bike route, New York State bike route 5, and they don't want, we could also put parallel parking on the Monroe Avenue section of Route 31. There's plenty of room there to do it. Monroe Avenue used to be 3 lanes wide, and the village had it reduced back to 2. That would do everything that we want. There's other villages that have the same flow with streets that are that dimension that have on-street parking. There's no reason we can't do it. It's just we have a DOT that's living in the 1970s.
Well, maybe it's one of the things that we might advocate for then.
We might as well push, and we know they're not going to do it now, but you always ask for more than you're going to get.
Yeah, and Lily, good point. I'm capturing notes on all these, and we'll put this on the action items. I see Captain DeLizer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Renee, I'll handle that if you want.
Dan, could I make a request? When you do your notes, would you send them to Dorothea so we have one official set of everything that's in one place? That would help.
I have and will, Bob. Captain DeLizer's back, so wanted to make sure he was addressed as well.
Oh, Captain DeLizer, you're back. You have the floor.
I am back. Sorry I had to run out there. Of course, inevitably, every time I'm in the middle of something, the phone rings. I think, covered what we're going to be doing going forward. I guess, what questions does everybody have?
I'll jump in first. How does this work in your scheduling so that it's not – what I've heard from the residents quite a bit is that one-off is really nice. A regular cadence would be ideal. How does that work? What can you commit to? How does that work in your world?
Well, what we are in the town of Pittsford, which will include the village, we have 2 cars assigned there around the clock. So all 3 of our shifts, morning, afternoon, and overnight, have 2 cars. So there's in addition, obviously, to their calls for service that they're answering, their investigations that they're working on. When they have downtime, there's a number of what we call special attention requests that they have to take care of. So throughout the town of Pittsford, I will say that the town of Pittsford is very heavy with special attention requests, probably more so than Parrington and Penfield combined. There's quite a bit. Obviously, the location of the town is a factor for that because Pittsford is more towards the middle of the county than Parrington or Penfield, which are more on the outskirts. So it's a matter of getting in and addressing all of those different special attention requests for mostly traffic. So they will rotate on their downtime in between jobs between the different SA requests. So it's one of those. It's nothing we're going to say every day at this time we're going to have this much, or every particular shift we're going to have this many minutes or hours dedicated to it. It's going to be call dependent. Their first priority is answering 911 calls for service, getting their criminal investigations that they all carry, their follow-up. So if somebody reports getting their car broken into or their house broken into, the deputies will usually handle those investigations themselves unless it becomes so complex that we pass it off to one of our investigators. But typically a deputy is carrying 5 or 6 or 7 criminal investigations at any given point. So getting those taken care of obviously is also a draw on their downtime, but definitely hitting the special attentions, particularly for Pittsford, which has always had more. So that's always been even more of a priority for the Pittsford cars, making sure those are all addressed. So it's a matter of how much downtime that they have and how many special attention requests are active within the town and village of Pittsford at any given point.
Sure. Thank you. And just one quick follow-up question. Are you okay with us doing PR around this? It's not exactly a white lie, but it's us saying, hey, the police are going to be there a lot more and broadcasting that to our community. Yeah. Obviously, that hits the people that live here, doesn't hit the people speeding in from outside and in other places. But in general, are you okay with us kind of telling everybody this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Obviously, our priority is getting people to slow down. We're not really there to write a lot of tickets. I mean, if that's what we have to do to make the problem stop, then we'll do it. But if we can get people to slow down through education, great. My guess is usually when you do with issues like this, it's a combination of education and enforcement. So if they see the deputies there, I mean, let's face it, every time, it's not just when they're working on speed enforcement, if they're working on a report, find a place in that area to write it, because every time someone sees a police car, they assume that they're shooting radar, even if you're just there working on a report or something. So having the cars will, generally speaking, the cars will, when they have to work on something that they're going to be writing, they will go find one of their special attentions that is in their area of assignment, and they'll go sit there when they do it, because it kind of kills two birds with one stone. They get their work done, and they provide some deterrent by doing that.
Looks like John Limbeck has his hand up.
John, you have the floor.
Captain DeLizer, I was wondering, since this the DOT has all of this in the works, the planning for the bridge and everything, is there any way the Sheriff's Department should weigh in on the DOT's plans for any recommendations?
We typically do not weigh in with the Department of Transportation with any of their projects. We're here for enforcement to improve public safety, but we are not traffic engineers, so we don't cross into that lane with them. If they ask us a specific question, of course we would answer it, but no, typically speaking, we just don't have the experience with traffic design like they do. So there's not a lot that we're probably going to be able to offer in terms of how the road is set up. That's really their area of expertise.
Because I was with a friend this afternoon. She lives in Wood Creek, and she thinks there's about 400 people that live there.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could eliminate the two 45-mile-an-hour signs between Mitchell Road and the village boundary, that would help tremendously. And since, like, the Sheriff's Department is aware of local population changes and things like that, if we could get rid of those two signs, that would help tremendously.
Mm-hmm. And once again, what I've discovered, because there's a few Department of Transportation committees that I go to on a regular basis, or I did before all this COVID stuff happened. I have discovered by sitting in on those meetings, there are a lot of rules regarding signage and what they have to do depending on the way the roads are, the populations are. So usually when I see requests like that made, the engineer will usually have a lengthy response into the laws of why it has to be a certain way. So, I will freely admit, I don't understand it, and I don't, it's not my area of expertise. So, ultimately, I'd say something like that would be best directed either from the village or from the residents towards the DOT, saying, hey, we'd like this, and then see what their response is. Do they have to have them there? And if they don't, then that's obviously a conversation that I think that the village could have with them to say, well, if we don't need to have them there, do we want to have them there? And kind of have that conversation.
So then it's up to the officials of the village to take care of that? Because
that would be the town. So it would be before the village, it would be the town. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Give you some background here?
There is like five 30-mile-an-hour signs before you get to the village on Jefferson Road. So I don't understand if past precedence, plays any part of this, why we can't use that as an example.
Right, and I don't know. Yeah.
We as village residents have met with DOT at least five times, and several of these meetings, we had Bill Smith from the town with us to request that we enact a transition zone. One of the reasons why the DOT initially resisted the 25 mile per hour speed limit is they said, well, you're going to have rear end collisions. Well, the solution to that, we talked to SRF, our traffic engineer. The solution is to have a transition zone that goes down to, say, like you said, 35 miles per hour, like it does on Jefferson Road. And particularly, we made the argument that both the Wood Creek neighborhood and certainly the Highland Cottages, which has been built in the last 10 years, both have high percentages of elderly drivers. It makes sense to lower the speed limit there, but they just are, you know, stubborn, I would say. But I think it's something we should continue to push on, and we should seek support from not only the town, but also the school district as well.
So, Bob, just a quick
question. It doesn't make any
sense. You said they are pushing back. Did you mean DOT or the
DOT?
Is the town,
I mean,
board? Okay. Because in
Region
our
Region 4 of DOT.
Okay.
Right.
In the Active Transportation Plan, I think we have Bill Smith's support on the transition zone. So we just need to maybe step up teaming with them to push for that to happen.
Step up our lobbying, and
okay.
Even if we, you know, want to ask help from our Albany representatives, we should do
okay.
that also.
That's an easy, inexpensive fix. It's a sign change.
It makes so much sense because you're on the bridge, and like we've all noticed, you see that 45 mile per hour sign.
You do.
Please remember that a year ago, Rich Funke's office told me explicitly that we weren't important enough to warrant his help.
Well, he's not going to be in office much longer because his term has expired at the end of the year.
Okay, is there anything else that you all as residents want to, so that we can let Captain DeLizer go about his day before he gets another phone call? Is there anything else that you would like to communicate with him to him, and then how do we follow up with him on this, on keeping current on how things are going over there, so he knows?
Brooke has her hand up.
So did John, but I won't repeat a lot because I think all of the neighbors and Renee and the mayor have done a great job explaining our problem and why we're so frustrated. I think the problem is in both directions, and I think you, Captain DeLizer, alluded to understanding that, but it truly is when people come over the bridge going outbound, they just pick up speed and they are just cruising out of town. And I took some video, and you can see Art's, you know, video in and out, but it's a problem in both directions. People are not slowing down. They're not taking their foot off the gas. You basically have to take your foot off the gas when you get over that hill coming in to reach 30 miles an hour by the time you hit the village line, and nobody is doing that. I mean, we do it as neighbors and the few people that know about it, but no, like nobody else does. And I do notice when you guys are out there with your patrol cars, it is a noticeable difference. Like I'll be in the yard and I'm like, oh my gosh, the traffic's going so slow. I wonder what's going on. And I go out and sure enough, there's a car out there. So out there is truly making a difference. If it can be a regular thing, we will really, really appreciate it. So thank you.
It's too bad, you know, you can't leave a dummy car that occasionally the lights on the top would start to light. So people would think it was really an active car.
We do have a program where we do put cars out. We do not have that technology, however, though. But if you find where you can find that, let me know.
Captain DeLizer, Art gave us two kind of Google map shots of Durham Way and suggested that would be a great place for your cars to sit because you can see both directions and you can get in and out quickly. So I'll make sure that you receive those. I don't know.
Thank you.
Art, you want to chime in there, Art? Okay. I think that's good enough. Then.
Well, maybe I can chime in. Excuse me, Bob Michaels.
Oh, go ahead, Bob.
I live right on the corner facing State Street on the corner of Durham Way. And yes, agreed, that would be an ideal spot. It won't hinder anybody on Durham Way. And I think it'd be a fruitful spot coming both ways. And I welcome it.
Yep. Okay. I'll make sure that the deputies are aware.
Okay, so the trailer, Captain Delacer, you'll let us know when the trailer is out. And I mean, we do know that the mere presence of that thing, much like having a patrol car sitting, will change driver behavior, which is great. So it won't be a true sense of, it's not like when you go undercover and try to collect traffic data, you know, doing a speed count from a different way, but it'll help just communicate that we care about you slowing down and you need to slow down. And you missed the piece, Zach, who is our director of DPW, put out the speed sentry signs. Are they already out, Zach?
Yes.
Okay. And then some cones that we're going to try to make people slow down a little bit, but it's, you know, because it's DOT, they may at some point ask us why the cones are out, but we're going to hopefully, you know, and just, again, another hazard in the road, another alert.
Right.
I think those are the only two things that you missed.
Okay.
I think John had something else to say.
I just wanted to offer Captain Delizer, I've got one of the flattest driveways on State Street, number 62. Mm-hmm. You can get in and out both directions very easy. I've got a bathroom, I've got a coffee pot and cold water.
62 State. I will pass that on to the cars that you're good with them using the driveway.
Thank you. And thanks for taking the time.
Well, Andy, absolutely. Thanks for your time today.
No problem at all.
Excuse me, can I ask the captain one more?
Yes, you can.
One more comment. Thank you. Captain, I am under the belief very sternly that tickets are the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that it could create a public relations issue, perhaps, that the Sheriff's Department doesn't really want to tangle with.
No, However, we issue tickets all the time, so we've been doing that forever, so not really.
Okay. My encouragement would be to have your people ticket as much as possible. We've gone through the phase a couple of years ago of warnings that did very little. There were a few tickets issued, but I think especially when they see the lights lit up, when the cars are lit, and they've stopped somebody, and an officer is talking to that speeder, everybody going by will not only slow down, but they will put themselves in that shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage that very much. Thanks for your help.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anything else while we still have Andy? Any other comments, questions for the captain? Andy, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. This was, you all shared my first experience with a video internet meeting. So thank you very much for your patience while I kind of fumbled around with this and learned my way through it. Thank you very much. It was definitely
a great job.
It is the future. I'm sure this will be the first of many times that I will be doing this.
Do you want to do it again with us tomorrow?
Whenever you guys want to do this, let me know. I'll be more than happy to be there. I'll get better at it every time, I promise.
Thanks, Captain.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
So, Bob, you're going to let us know when the DOT
meeting. Can everybody hear me? I'm just hearing audio.
Yeah, I've got to contact Joel at the DOT, and we'll send around an email so you'll all know when that is.
Right.
Thank you.
And thanks for doing this today, trustees and everybody.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much. Get outside.
Thanks, guys. Keep the ideas coming, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Brooke, can you meet me at your driveway for a second after? Brooke?
Sure.
I don't know if you can hear me. Okay, just for a second, I want to ask you something. Thanks.
Wait, is there lemonade involved or something? It sounds like we're missing something exciting.
I have
Hey guys, the trustees, is it time to call in Charlie
and Jeff?
And Jeff?
Okay. Yep. I'll call Jeff. Dan and Bob and I. I just want to make sure I get all the once you send your notes around, just some of the action items so that we keep track of them. And but we don't need to do that right now with everyone on. online. So, and then Art, Bob, I don't know who else is left here. Brooke, who is the best? Is there one person that we could be in touch with in your neighborhood just so we can keep an eye on how things are going with the, now that the deputies are stepping up their enforcement and we've got cones out and radar signs?
I vote for Brooke. I vote for Brooke. Does everybody else vote for Brooke?
That's great, because I talk to Brooke all the time, so that's easy.
And, you know, I'm happy. We're here all the time. I've always got my hands on the street. But I, you know, I don't want to step on anyone's toes. People have been dealing with this for like 30 years, and, you know, they've been working on this far longer than me. But, you know,
I was going to say, talk amongst yourselves and then let us know.
That of the State Street neighbors.
Okay.
I will try to set up a meeting with Joel at DOT this week, and I will let everybody know when that is.
Is that, Bob, is that something that the neighbors will be invited to, or is that we're just keeping them in touch or keeping them updated on what happens during that?
I think we'll just keep them updated, because generally I think unless DOT is having a public information meeting, they prefer just to meet with two representatives.
Okay. I just didn't want to miscommunicate on that. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And I would ask the rest of the board if you allow Renee and I to meet with DOT, because that's generally their preference, is to not meet with the whole board. It also simplifies the scheduling. And we'll keep you all in the loop.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Next item, we have consideration of a peddler's permit, I believe, for Holiday Hots. And Jeff Turner is going to give us some background. After looking at the proposal we approved last week, Steve actually went up there with Charlie from Holiday Hots and was concerned about the safety of that site. Jeff has taken another look at the code and found another section that actually allows us another option, which is simpler, to approve Holiday at their traditional location across the street from Village Hall, and eliminates the safety concerns. So I'm going to give Jeff, if you want to unmute yourself, you have the floor.
So it's a transient retail merchant license, and that's this is what Steve suggested last Tuesday. But in reading the code further, the clerk can allow this anywhere in the village. So there's no reason why it can't be allowed exactly where he was before. And that would eliminate any of the problems the traffic problems and the sidewalk problems that would exist where it was anticipated he might go last Tuesday. It's exactly as Steve talked about last Tuesday. Steve, you got anything further on this? You're muted, Steve.
Steve, unmute.
I'm trying to.
Okay.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yes. Yep.
All right, yeah. Charlie and I met down in across from Blades, and I wasn't comfortable with it at all. He would be way too close to the traffic there, and it's not worth it. You know what I mean? To have him to risk it. So the transient merchant item is a way to put him across the street, but it is also a pretty extensive loophole that I think needs to be removed from the code. Because it doesn't.
I hadn't gotten there yet, but this is a really scary provision in the code, and I just didn't know it was there, and I apologize for that. But it's not something we ought to have in our code.
No, the same permissions with controls are already embedded in the zoning code. That one allows pretty much carte blanche to anybody who meets the criteria.
And gives Dorothea the absolute discretion, which is not appropriate for her description, the description of her duties in the village law, and probably something that she doesn't really want.
Okay, so for now we can use it, but we want to take it out eventually.
Yeah, I wouldn't say eventually.
Is that right?
I would say we can use it now, but I would get rid of it.
Okay. So can I then make a motion?
And I think that we ought to try to stay as close to the code as we can, but try to meld in her powers, Dorothea's powers and duties as defined by village law. So even though it isn't provided that it is done this way in the code, I would suggest that it be a trustee resolution authorizing her to issue the license, collect the appropriate deposit, collect the appropriate tax, impose the same conditions as the ZBA imposed for this temporary use last year. The only thing we need to fill it in the blank on is the period that this is going to be in use. Last year it was, I think, May 1st, October 31st. Obviously, May 1st is gone.
May 19th to October 31st.
If that's what Charlie wants, yeah. So it was May 1st to October 31st. I don't know do we know what Charlie wants, Steve?
He wants to be there as soon as possible. So, I mean, if we did it through October 31st, as long as weather permitted, he would stay till then. They typically do not travel to the south till somewhere around Thanksgiving.
All right. So, I mean, it could be from now until October 31st, 2020. The additional condition I would like to see in there is that it's going to be compliant with any current New York State executive orders and requirements of New York State and Monroe County Health Departments.
And I'd like to propose some language to include as a finding for the resolution. I'd like to propose that the Board of Trustees finds that this is an appropriate location for a transient merchant because it does not conflict with existing storefronts or other existing food serving businesses and is adjacent to the municipal lot, providing parking and a safe means of accessing the vendor.
It also
is not near where it will have a nuisance or adverse effect on neighboring homes or a residential neighborhood.
Bob, I'm in agreement with that. Will the people from Hungry's or Thirsty's think differently? Do we have any problems there? Because it's close to that.
They've coexisted for the 10 years that he's been here, so I think we're pretty safe on that. He's not on the same street. He's not on the same block. He's not in front of their businesses. He's around the corner. So, you know, in theory, he's paying rent to the town of Pittsburgh, but that's something that's between him and the town of Pittsburgh.
Exactly.
Jeff, I have a question for you. Do we need any language in here saying, you know, normally this is the purview of the PZBA, but given the pandemic?
No, I wouldn't get into that at all. I mean, this is a totally different animal than the temporary zoning permit.
It's a legitimate section of our code. It just may be a section that we may want to modify when we get to that.
Fair enough. Just wanted to check.
Trustee Lamphere, I would suggest that we do that sooner rather than later because we're setting a precedent. And if one transient license is permitted, we can expect others. So I think that we probably want to take care of it sooner rather than later.
And that's precisely, Lily, why I added the language, because I wanted to clarify why a transient merchant permit might be allowable here, but may not be appropriate in another location where it would cause a nuisance or a conflict with businesses that pay taxes.
To circle
back on the discussion the last time we got together, would this also be applicable for food trucks in that same parking lot? It seems like it would be.
So I would say that, first of all, what I was going to say is that one of the reasons we're not allowing him on the street is because it is a hazard to pedestrian and street traffic. And yes, if you have a food truck that wants to come in and is like in a situated in a like place and area, it would be difficult to turn him down.
That's right.
But the whole problem here is that this is really a cobbled process. We're not following the process of our code, because if we were following the process of our code, the trustees wouldn't be a trustee issue, and it ought to be. So we're not in compliance with our code, but we're trying to do the best we can to keep Dorothea on the straight and narrow in terms of her authority under village law.
I think by having trustee involvement in doing a resolution, it gives weight to the poorly written section of the code that gives Dorothea an administrative official discretionary power. But yep. By having findings and having a finding of the Board of Trustees, it demonstrates a thoroughness to the process so that her approval is relegated to being only administrative.
Yes.
Trustee Lanphier, I would then assume that to have this section just removed from the code would be a fairly simple process. Because we are just taking it in its entirety and just removing it because it's covered in other parts of our code.
Correct.
So we're taking an outdated section and we're just eliminating it. So we don't need to stretch this out for 6 months. We can deal with it in a very timely fashion.
We could. We'll have to take it to public hearing, and we'll have to have a revision thing written, prepared for when we have that resolution to take it to public hearing. We could do that at our next meeting.
That would be excellent. Thank you.
And simultaneously, though, we want to make sure that the PZBA then has what they need to be able to approve these. Because along with this, Justin was concerned that the way the code is written for him, he would not have been able to approve this. So we want to make sure that we do those two things in tandem. And Lily, I respect what you're saying that you don't want this to take 6 months. I don't either. But we also don't want to leave it in a situation where nothing could ever get approved.
No, I think that this trustee Lanphier, that the code that we have in place would address that. And I mean, we have had several temporary uses over the years, the Christmas tree sales and hot dog cart being two of them. And I think that the way it's operated for the past 10 years or 15 years has been successful. And I understand the reservations expressed by the PZBA, but I think Jeff also answered those. By just changing a few of the pieces of language in that code, I think it would have satisfied the PCBA, their concerns, and also make our temporary use permit process a little more streamlined because it's more clear.
Steve has a comment.
Steve? Yeah, I think in the adjusting of the code, removing the transient merchant, and then looking at the code, we need to talk to Justin because he seemed to allude something about the code that he would not have liked to have done a temporary permit for Charlie because of the residential nature of these zones. So it might, I'd say we need to get Justin involved exactly what the conflict is with the wording of the code that he feels he would not have been able to approve Charlie based on the way the code is written right now. So the biggest thing is maybe somehow just adjust so that the LOR is exempt from some of the restriction of the residential because it has a residential moniker, but it's truly not a residential neighborhood. It's a residential in vision, not in use.
Mm-hmm.
I have read Justin Leakiv's memo about his concerns, and they're very easily fixed. It's a two or three sentence fix, and it's
great.
There's no problems.
Great. So let's do that simultaneously with taking out the other language that granted Dorothea the.
The other thing I want to say real quick is that Charlie and his wife have gone to classes. In regards to the COVID-19 pandemic, they have taken the classes on how to conduct their business safely, do social distancing, and operate within the letter of the new executive orders.
Good. We'll make sure that that's part of the findings.
All right. I just want to be clear on this. I mean, should we finish Harladay before we
yes,
go on
please.
To this?
Let's do that. So we have a motion on the floor, and I agree with Lily's addendum that we should acknowledge that another finding is that the code enforcement officer has told us that the operators of this business have gotten training for how to enact appropriate social distancing during the coronavirus crisis. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Dorothea, could we have a roll call vote?
Trustee Keating?
Keating, aye.
Mayor Corby?
Corby, aye.
Trustee Stetzer?
Stetzer, aye.
Trustee Galusha?
Yes, Trustee Galusha, aye.
Trustee Lamphere?
Trustee Lamphere, aye.
Motion passes.
So, Dorothea, Charlie should come see you to get the paperwork done properly?
Yeah, I guess. The problem is we don't even have, Steve, is this something you can create in the program? I have nothing I can issue because we've never issued this permit. So I'll work with Steve to come up with that.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I'll let Charlie know.
You have to get a $500 deposit, Dorothea.
That I do know.
Okay.
So in terms of the code change, we had discussed doing a 0.1 draft of the or enactment of the code, but I think, you know, for these temporary use permits, we've got the Christmas tree guy coming in on the horizon. Believe it or not, that's coming soon. We probably ought to fix this so the planning board or the zoning board, rather the zoning board of appeals, feels comfortable operating. I can get my proposed changes to you quickly. The question is the interface with the zoning board of appeals, which I do not
represent. I've already talked to Justin extensively about this issue, and I think we're on the same page. I think the stumbling block is simply the name of the district, which it's like residential office, and it's like Steve said, it's residential character. It's not, those buildings are entirely office use. It's because they're surrounded by parking lots, I doubt we'll see a residential use back there. It is a multi-use district, but I think we could simply call it residential character to distinguish it from the two true residential districts that we have.
I don't really think you need to go that far.
Okay. What do you suggest?
I don't have chapter and verse with me, but I can get that to you. I put it in a memo. It's just a cleaning up a couple of the phrases in the code, and then the temporary use permits will apply to every district as they did in our previous code, which never gave us a problem, which we used for, you know, 60 plus years without any lawsuit or any problem. So I just don't see the problem.
So why don't we delegate this to Jeff and ask Jeff to present it at our next board meeting, and then we could also invite the PZBA to attend that meeting virtually so they can weigh in.
I would agree to that, Trustee Lamphere.
Okay, everybody's okay with that?
I mean, looking towards the future, Dorothea, I don't think knows how we're going to be meeting at our next meeting.
Next week's meeting will be virtual, as Bob was able to.
Oh, that's right, it's in May. Sorry, it's in May.
We're looking at June 7th right now is the latest extension of the change in the open meetings law. I anticipate that they're going to extend that. I can't imagine. And this leads to the other item that I remembered, Bob, that we talked about that we wanted Jeff to look at. The sand patch. They're looking about their non-municipal and operating. We're not sure where that falls on us if we issue that non-municipal.
And this is for Steve and for Jeff. But we're concerned that we can and we do grant them a permit conditional upon compliance with whatever New York State standards are for the phases of reopening.
Well, I would think so. I don't know what Steve thinks, but I think provided that you make everything that you do subject to the executive orders and the health department requirements, you're only telling them they can do it. But if they're out of compliance, that's their problem, not our problem.
Yeah, that's Steve? We just want to clarify so we're not taking on liability. Steve?
Yeah, I would definitely say any resolution you make has to be based on following the guidelines for the pandemic. And unfortunately, it'll be on me by the paperwork that I've received from the state to make sure that they adhere to those guidelines. And the other thing I want to mention, just fixing the LOR aspect, as Jeff alluded, changing the code is required because the other problem you have or other issue that Justin had issue with is the Buffalo Bills. And that's in a school in a residential district in the LOR, in the regular residential, not in the LOR. So the wording has to be adjusted overall, not just for that district.
And I think what the other concern that the planning board had, Jeff, again, was they were concerned that we not allow temporary commercial operations on residential properties and residential neighborhoods. The two exceptions where we might want to allow that are things like the farmers market on an institutional property in a residential district at the Spiegel Center and the example that Steve mentioned of the Buffalo Bills.
All right, that's going to be a whole different rethinking of the temporary use permit statute. When we adopted this code, we adopted it from the perspective that we were trying to import into the new code, basically the policies from the old code regarding temporary use permits. And there was never any distinction about residential or commercial. The use was whether or not it would be compatible with the neighborhood in which it was being placed and whether or not there would be public interest and public safety issues. So there was never a residential versus commercial zoning district approach. It was always village-wide. So if that's going to change, that will need a little more work than I had thought. Because right now, I mean, my approach had been that we were trying to do in the new code what we had done in the old, which is what that new code accomplishes with a little language cleanup. But if you're going to say we're going to treat temporary uses in residential districts different than in the commercial districts, then that's going to be a much different kind of change.
We haven't really discussed it as a board. And, you know, the one problem I can see from Justin and Justin's interpretation of what they'd like to see is in the past, I believe we gave there was a temporary use permit granted for an estate sale. And the reason for doing that was because of parking and loading on Monroe Avenue, where it was perceived there might be a safety problem. So, I mean, obviously, we don't want to prohibit estate sales. So we've sort of got to think this one through.
Actually, I thought that with that estate sale, we did a non-municipal use permit to address.
I thought we did a non-municipal use because they were using the sidewalk.
Right. That's right, because it's the right-of-way. That involved the right-of-way. Yep, you're right.
And I think that, and if you want to use the example of the estate sale, and Steve, chime in if you disagree, I think that an estate sale is a normal accessory use for a residential use. I mean, it's something that happens in residential areas when somebody passes away, somebody sells. It's sort of a normal accessory residential use.
I feel the same, and we talked about this before. Some of this, or like a one-day tent in a yard, those things should not have to go. Should not be the board shouldn't have to weigh in and have a public hearing on putting a one-day event up. That's my feeling. It should be an administrative item that's taken care of in-house without having to go through you know, jump through a bunch of hoops. If somebody wanted to have a 1 day or 2 day estate sale, 1 day 10 event, that I think should be taken care of within the office versus the board.
As long as it doesn't become, you know, every weekend at this house, they're hosting weddings, you know, something where it's
commercial profit. And that's the building inspector's job to make sure that he's looking at these things to make sure that they are, in fact, a normal accessory use for the district. So I think that our temporary use permit code, current code, works. There may have been a little confusion in some of the language, and that's easily rectified, but that wouldn't really entail a philosophical change about where we're headed with this.
So let's, Jeff, I think we should delegate this one to you, and then if you could circulate whatever you propose so we can all look at it a little bit with the agenda for the next board meeting. Sure. Does that give you enough time?
Oh, yeah. I've already done. I'm done with it. I just have to find my email and replicate it.
Let's give Justin a head.
Just curious, if we're in the part of the transient merchant, if you were going to plan on removing it in whole, do you have to set up for a public hearing now so that it's done, that at least section is done in the relative near future?
They can't, Steve, at this time. They have to have the local law removing it in front of them before they set a motion.
We have to have the actual language on a document.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's next meeting.
All right. Anything else?
I just want to give a quick update. I'm going to send out the tentative agenda tomorrow. We really don't have much on there except what we're just adding now. We have the public hearing for the pub. I still not have heard from him as to what is going on over there. So that's is the only thing we had really for that meeting, and probably a bill pass. So with a couple items we're just adding.
So for the pub, Dorothea, refresh my recollection. Wasn't that application for an event in May?
It was.
Well, I think we're getting past the point where the public had notice of it originally, that there was an event scheduled there for May. And now we don't know if or when he's going to do it. I think we kind of ought to pull the plug on this and let him start over, because the public really doesn't have any idea that we're thinking about going for that. The only time he could do it would be after May, so the public isn't aware of that at all.
He's not going to be doing it in May anyway, so I think that makes sense. So what do we need to do? We tabled it before to
next Tuesday, correct, Dorothea?
Yes.
So on Tuesday, we'll deal with it, and I think we ought to just not deny, just get rid of the application and refund whatever he paid.
Just one other note on potentially an item, and it depends. Steve has got to talk to the owner about it, but there is a request from Lock 32 to open a temporary patio in the parking lot that Ted Collins owns next to it. The proposal is not complete or firm yet, but that may or may not be on the agenda for Tuesday. Steve is talking to Casey.
And to be clear, everybody, that's the lot between Aladdin's and Lock 32 that has a handful of spots in it.
That's right. That's correct.
Also, guys, just got a text from Charlie, and he said, you know, he wanted me to thank the board and Jeff and Dorothea for helping push that through. And he was sorry he couldn't attend. He had a personal situation come up.
You ought to thank Steve. Steve's the one who found this in the code.
That's right.
Thank everybody but Steve.
A little fun reading in the middle of the night.
All right.
Okay, I'll make a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
I'll second
it. Lily seconded. Dorothea, could you do a roll call vote?
Trustee Keating?
Keating, aye.
Mayor Corby?
Corby, aye.
Trustee Stetzer?
Stetzer, aye.
Trustee Galusha?
Trustee Galusha, aye.
Trustee Lamphere?
Lamphere, aye.
Got it. Motion
passes. Thank you, everyone.
Have a great evening.
Don't forget to stop the recording,
Dorothea.
I'm going to. All right. See you guys. Bye-bye.
This conference is no longer being recorded.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.